production funding for Behind the Headlines is made possible in part by the WKNO Production Fund, the WKNO Endowment Fund, and by viewers like you. Thank you.
President of the University of Memphis, David Rudd, tonight on Behind the Headlines. I'm Eric Barnes with the Daily Memphian. Thanks for joining us. I am joined tonight by David Rudd, president of the U of M. Thanks for being here.
Happy to be here. Thanks for the invitation.
Along with Bill Drees, reporter with the Daily Memphian. We'll talk about all kinds of things. And as I joked with you before the show, as I was sort of putting my notes together for the show, we were searching the Daily Memphian site and elsewhere. And you have a lot going on.
From construction
to athletics to academics to, you know, changing demographics. But just a big picture question for you right now. What is your biggest challenge? As you look, you've been on the job 5 years, you look at the next 5 years, the biggest challenge for you and for the university is what?
Yeah, I think the largest challenge for the university really has revolved around the financial model for the university. When I started, there was a very large operational deficit. And the reason I say that is because the financial model impacts everything we can do. It impacts our capacity to recruit and support students, our ability to support students adequately through graduation to improve our graduation numbers, our retention numbers, and we've made significant progress in all of those areas. All of that is driven by the financial model for the university, and that includes, you know, some of the things you mentioned, like growth at the university, particularly fiscal. If you look at the physical plant of the university, we've had some nice growth, but at the core of all of that is a solid financial model.
And that solid financial model, and I think that we had you on the show 2-3 years ago, and we talked about it, and I think we talked about it in the context of kids are similar age. I have two kids in college right now, and you just look at the exploding cost of higher ed.
Yeah.
It is just amazing. I mean, the percentage growth across the board, the debt levels that people are increasingly worried about that students and families are taking on to get their kids through school. How does that, when you look at the big picture of exploding cost of tuition, how does that scare you, or is that an opportunity for you to set yourself apart?
Yeah, it's an opportunity for us to set ourselves apart, which we've done. I mean, I we've done it in a significant way, and to be more specific around that, we've had the lowest cost increases in the state of Tennessee over the last 5 years by a significant margin. And that includes 2 years of zero tuition increase for the first time in 40 years at the University of Memphis. Our average tuition fee increase at the university over the last 5 years is 1.7%. There's not another public university in the state that's close to us.
Well, they might be, what, 4 or 5%?
Usually over 2.5% to 3%. So you're looking at 2.5% to 3%. The Tennessee Higher Education Commission caps the maximum tuition increase annually. We have always been well below that. And the reason that that's been so important for us is affordability has always been the challenge. And so financial challenges are the single most significant barrier for our students. So containing costs, lowering costs, which we've done, we reduced out-of-state tuition 28% 2 years ago. It's had significant impact. We reduced tuition costs in law school. Out-of-state tuition costs have had significant impact. But at the heart of that is improvement in our outcomes. We've improved graduation rates 10% in the last 4 years. Our retention rate this year for first to second year retention was at 81%. The national average for public universities first to second year retention is 71%. So we have had very good performance. All of that is tied toward affordability for our students and making it easier for them to get through the process financially and overcome that barrier. And at the same time, as you might imagine, it's a huge portion of our financial model. 63% of our revenue is tuition revenue.
Briefly, before I go to Bill, tuition for an incoming freshman this year will be roughly what?
Around $9,700, $9,800 in that ballpark.
For
a little
for
bit
full year,
a little
for
bit
the full year, for a semester.
For a year, for the academic year. That's correct,
Bill.
And the academic year is underway, and you have a lot of freshmen on campus.
We had a new record as of yesterday. That number was 2714 for us. The not just a new record for freshmen, but also the highest academic credentials for the freshman class. The single greatest predictor of success in college is not your ACT or your SAT score. It's actually your GPA. Over 35% of incoming freshmen had a GPA of 3.75 or above. So we are attracting high-performing students. We're excited about that. And we had a significant increase in terms of out-of-state freshmen, which for us is important.
Has higher education also shifted its emphasis away from ACT and the SAT to look at that and to look at retention?
We have, absolutely. And again, you know, the ACT and the SAT are not better predictors than GPA. And so how somebody does in high school is related in significant fashion to how they do at the university level. We've better resource support for students academically and in terms of counseling and advising. And I think we've done a better, more effective job. And as a result, we've seen dramatic improvement in retention and, as I'd mentioned, significant improvement in graduation.
Going into the academic year, you posted on Twitter two, I guess you would call them heat maps, mm-hmm. that looked at where your students come from 5 years ago and where they come from currently. And a pretty dramatic difference. You have a lot of out-of-state students, a lot more out-of-state students than you've had in the past.
We do, yeah, absolutely. And that's directly linked to a move we made a couple of years ago to reduce out-of-state tuition by 28% to make it more affordable. Our price point wasn't where it needed to be. We had a dramatically smaller number. We had a 25% increase in freshmen out of state this year, which is critical for us. Given where we are located geographically, the growth of the University of Memphis is not just going to be in Tennessee, but in this region. We wanted a more significant national footprint. We are getting a more significant national footprint. We've done that strategically. We're excited about that. And it was a response to shrinking and contracting demographics in the Southeast. There is an estimated about 2.5% decline in the number of high school students graduating, not just in Tennessee, but in the Southeast in general. So we need to have a more significant national footprint.
How much does the creation or expansion of what I'll broadly call amenities, you know, again, with having college-age kids and gone on lots of tours and all that, I mean, a lot of what they're selling is the academics, a lot of what they're selling is the dining halls and the living experience and the neighborhood. So everything from, you know, I think you've added quite a bit of campus housing, on-campus housing, whether it's university owned or partnered kind of, you know, situations. You've got Highland Row, which is more of a kind of fun entertainment district, which is important, I assume, to the recruitment process.
Oh, profoundly important.
So talk about do you see a dollar, you know, do you see a correlation between those investments and this increased pool of kids that are coming to the U of M?
Yeah, no question about it. I mean, there has been significant private investment on Highland, as you know, and that Highland Road development in that area has been a significant part of that. We've got partnerships with some of the local apartment complexes right on the edge of our campus, but we've also invested significantly. I mean, we just completed the bridge, which was an $18 million project. We completed attached to that is a 1,150 space parking garage, parking facility, which was critical. On one side of the bridge, there's an amphitheater and a new plaza getting ready to break ground on our student wellness center next week. All of that's critical. I would argue that for us, those are critical elements of a community residential experience. I mean, part of what our goal is to really transform the campus into a meaningful residential community. Those elements allow us to do that. All of that facilitates retention, completion, and success for students.
What, for the freshman class, what percentage live on campus or in the neighborhood? I don't know how you measure that.
We have about 2,600 beds on campus. The majority of those students are freshmen or sophomores that live in our facilities. We would like to double that over the course of the next 8 to 10 years, and we think we have the capacity to do that and a vision to make that happen. I will tell you, for the first time in our history, we actually were oversubscribed on student housing. So we actually are 100% in housing, plus we had an additional 120 to 30 students we were not able to accommodate that we had to move into local apartments rather than our facility. So we're actually, I think we actually have a good plan, and we're going to make that happen.
Bill.
So the bridge that you've talked about, for folks who don't know, for generations, students at the University of Memphis have dealt with that, those train tracks, and getting to class on time. The train tracks were actually there before the university was there. But let's talk about what that bridge and the plaza that's with it means for what changes in the area south of the railroad tracks all the way up to Park Avenue.
Yeah, absolutely. The bridge is more than just being able to get over that train and to remove that barrier. It really is about creating a sense of community for the campus and connections on our campus. The opportunity for growth on that southern side of campus is significant. We're going to have our Student Wellness Center over there. We'll be breaking ground on that. We've got the Mike Rosen Auditorium that will be starting the renovations and development of that in late spring, early summer. All of those facilities are on the other side of those tracks, and it really is critical for us to be able to have ease of access on the southern and northern sides of campus. And we have every expectation of continuing to improve and expand growth between that southern edge of campus and the Park Avenue campus. And there is a significant corridor there as well. So that bridge represents a lot of things for us, but probably connection and community are the two critical words.
With all that, I mean, I think Tom Bailey, who wrote the story about the bridge for us, talked about, and I think paraphrasing him, that you had pushed for, let's do something of some architectural significance.
Absolutely.
And you can see that on the south, just driving by South Campus, yeah. You can see that in the kind of reconfiguration of the Central Avenue corridor as it cuts through. I mean, when I moved to Memphis, you really felt walled off. If you drove by, you never really could see in or feel part of a campus, part of the campus. Mm-hmm. Now it's sort of, it's there, and it aesthetically, it's a whole different experience to be anywhere near that area. Is that just for fun, or is that a meaningful part of the business plan and the operational plan and the strategic plan of the university?
Oh, it's a critical part of it. I'd say that really is foundational to the effort, to really have a campus community that is inviting and welcoming and connected. That bridge was a critical part of that. I mean, if you didn't have the bridge, you feel disconnected in many ways. It really changes the feel of the campus, the look of the campus. It's iconic. We wanted an iconic image, and I think we've achieved that. We'll start in October after the parking expansion over Office Central is completed that's underway right now. We will start the new music performance facility, and you're going to see a facility that comes to the edge of Central that is inviting and welcoming, that is all the way to the edge of that entryway and has that same feel and experience.
It's no small project, a $40 million, is that correct?
It is, $36 million, I believe, is the precise figure.
With classrooms, a rehearsal space, there are 400, I didn't realize this, I don't know, that it just somehow surprised me, 400 students in the School of Music?
I think it may be a little bit over that
okay.
now.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's the only doctoral School of Music in the state. So we are the only School of Music that provides doctoral degrees as well. So it's a critical piece of the academic mission of the university.
Let's talk about students, and maybe a little bit back to, you're talking about the geographic areas. How have the lottery scholarships impacted the U of M, the Hope scholarships, yeah. and how has Bill Haslam, former governor, and the legislature introduced, free college tuition for up to 2 years, emphasis on associate degrees and emphasis on TCAT, technical degrees. Have those two things helped or hurt the U of M as it's been trying to move forward and grow?
I would tell you that those things have helped us in significant fashion. I had a couple of concerns about the Hope Scholarship. I'll mention that in a second. But I will tell you, Bill Haslam's legacy will be higher education and the economic impact that has had in this state. The autonomous board has been a big piece of that.
Your own Board of Regents, which had been a goal for the University of Memphis for decades.
Part of the reason we're able to do what we're doing is that we have our own board and that we can get things through and focus specifically on the needs of the university. I would argue that the Tennessee Promise that allowed community college students to have a free experience actually has had significant impact for us now after the first couple of years. We have the largest number of transfers that we've had,
I think, in a decade. Are they ending at 2 years, or are they taking that and then going over to you?
They're coming to us, and I think the numbers I looked at this morning, I think we're close to 1,500 transfer students. The majority of those are coming from community colleges within Tennessee and the area that are a function of Tennessee Promise. The Hope Scholarship is critical. A large number of our students have that scholarship support. I was a little bit concerned originally about the reduction in that number, even though it was a small reduction. We have found ways to support students in our scholarship changes that have kept that number stable. But yeah, it is a critical element.
10 minutes, Bill.
Because the Hope Scholarship is tied to GPA.
It is. It's tied to academic performance. Mm-hmm. That's correct.
Right, right. What does the pipeline between high school and your campus look like in terms of how students come prepared to learn in higher education?
It's essential that they come prepared. We've gotten more active in terms of growth of our dual enrollment programs. I think the number I saw this morning is we've got upwards of 1,700 dual enrollment students. We tend to get 40% of those students come to the University of Memphis. And the nice part of that is they've already had courses with us. They can get up to a year of credit, complete a year of credit prior to high school graduation. That lowers costs, that lowers student debt, and that reduces time to graduation, which is essential. We are building a dual enrollment high school on our Lambeth campus that's supported and funded by Jackson. The city of Jackson, an $18 million facility. It's expected to break ground in January. That'll be 600 students. We're working on a dual enrollment high school on the edge of Orange Mound right now. Mm-hmm. That would be a dual enrollment high school focused on entrepreneurship. The one in Jackson is focused on the health sciences. Those are critical for our future.
So getting into dual enrollment in the Orange Mound facility, There have been some forays into that. What prompted your university to be interested in doing that and getting into that end of the pipeline?
We thought it was critical around, I think the original question around cost and affordability and debt. There's not a more effective way to manage cost, affordability, and debt than to take those higher performing students and allow them the opportunity to complete a year of college prior to graduation in high school. They perform remarkably well. It provides a pipeline for us. We're able to manage that instruction to make sure it's high quality instruction. So we get a well-prepared student that's going to take less time on campus, be more successful, and be more effective.
We've talked about all these many positive things. You took some shots, took some fire over, and are still taking some fire over $15 minimum wage. And that, just for people who didn't follow it so much, Mayor Harris in part elevated this, County Mayor Harris, when he vetoed some spending on natatorium. A swimming instruction facility on the U of M campus that was going to be partly funded or is going to be partly funded by the county. That funding ultimately did go through. What is your plan, or do you have a plan, to get all the employees on the U of M to $15 minimum wage?
Yeah, in a word, yes. And I will note that veto was, the override was 12-1, if I'm not mistaken.
So we had
significant support. Yeah, we had significant support for that. Look, I've been really transparent about this. Let me be really clear about this. And I do think there's been some effort by the CA to just manufacture conflict where none exist. I think it's a little silly, frankly. We've been clear that we support this. Over the course of the last 4 years, we have had three significant hourly wage increases, the first in decades at the University of Memphis. I mean, I think a part of the story needs to be we've made enormous progress, unparalleled progress in the increase in the hourly wage at the University of Memphis. Our hourly wage is well over a dollar more than the University of Tennessee hourly wage, even though our funding from the state is their funding level is $2, almost $2 for every dollar we receive. So we are well ahead of the game. We're well ahead of any other public university in the state. I have very specifically talked with our leadership team about how we will do it. One of the things I've made clear is not only what we've done, but how we move forward. We do our budgets annually. When we receive the governor's budget in the spring, We don't know right now what that's going to be. It depends on the governor's budget, and it depends on our enrollment. And based on that, every year we sit down and do our budget. And we have a clear plan of how we're going to make that happen. But again, it is dependent on two variables that we will not know until spring. And I've been clear with our faculty senate about that. I've been clear with the staff senate about that. And I've been clear with anybody that's interested in talking about that. Interestingly enough, they requested my emails as a part of a Freedom of Information request. Look, I don't do planning through email. I mean, we do that in meetings and discussions, and we have a clear vision of where we're headed. We know where we're going, and if you look at the past 4 years, it's exactly what we've been doing.
And in an ideal world, you would get everyone to minimum $15 an hour. Yeah. When?
We have been doing it over the course of the last 2 years, and we think we can do it in two more years. But again, that is contingent on the governor continuing to support higher education. It's contingent on continuing stability in our enrollment and stability of our budget, and we think we've demonstrated that very clearly. It is interesting that the county recognized that for Shelby County schools, it's not just the $15 an hour, it's the compression above it. It's
right.
The exact same issue for us. It's not the $2.5 million to increase that for 300 and some employees. It's that we've got another 500 to 700 employees above that where we're going to have to address the issue of $4 to $5 million address the compression.
Right. Yeah. It is an interesting thing that I honestly, until this all came up, I had not thought about that.
Yeah.
But of course, you've got people who are already at $15
exactly.
an hour based on your scale, who've seniority, what it's skills, whatever that reason is, you can't just bring those people up. It's not fair to those people already there. So everyone has to get bumped up proportionally.
Exactly. And I would encourage the county mayor to understand that you've got to treat all of the state entities in equitable fashion. We have clearly demonstrated that we know what we're doing, we know how to do it, we'll continue to do it, and we'll meet the goal.
5 minutes left. Bill.
As this airs, we are a week past the Ole Miss game, and
that's true.
We
can congratulate me on
yes,
victory.
Yes,
congratulations on the great victory. But going into football season, there has again been some rumblings about conference realignment. Mm-hmm. What can you say about that, and how serious is this?
Well, I would tell you, I'm going to probably parrot what would. Bob Bowlesby said, the commissioner for the Big 12, anyone that tells you that they know what's going to happen over the course of the next 3 years is probably lying. I would tell you I have absolutely no certainty about what will happen, except one thing. It will be different than it is today. 5 years from now, it will be different. There are a lot of contracts, media rights deals that are coming up that will be renewed. Modified, extended, changed for different conferences. That will change the landscape as a whole. I don't profess to know exactly what that's going to be. I do know it'll be different. And I do know that we've got an obligation, I've got an obligation, and I'm accountable to position this university in the best possible way so that when that opportunity, if it does emerge, we are positioned to take advantage of it.
Does what's happening with the football program and the basketball program in terms of things like media rights, does that make the University of Memphis much more attractive in those contracts?
There's no question about it. And let me put a weighting to it for you as well. I mean, when you look at, and I was involved in the media rights negotiation for the American Athletic Conference. I'm chair of the President's Committee this coming year, and I can tell you very definitively the overwhelming majority of the issue is football. Football generates the vast majority of the interest, the revenue, and the opportunity. Basketball is a critical piece, but being able to have a competitive football program and a high-performing football program is critical for conference affiliation.
You have a coach of your basketball team, a Mr. Penny Hardaway, I believe his name.
I've heard of that guy.
You've heard of that guy.
Yeah.
The expectations on that basketball team and on that coach are off the charts. How much does that come into play in your daily life as president of the U of M? I mean, I imagine you're excited about it. I mean, you know, but is it a recruitment tool? Does it help with everything from fundraising beyond sports?
Yeah.
Okay. Beyond the money in the sports department. But we talk about all these. I mean, we spent, 20 plus minutes talking about all these academic opportunities and challenges and things. How much does this sports, and particularly that basketball team and Penny Hardaway, kind of shine a light, good and bad, and make opportunities possible for the rest of what you do?
You know, it's hard to say exactly how significant it is, other than to tell you it's remarkably significant. I mean, the visibility that you get out of athletics is tremendous. We raised a record amount last year, $44 million, and over 32 million of that was for academics. So we raised $3 academically for every dollar athletically, but I would tell you part of the reason we raised a record of 44 million was a function of visibility of athletics. And the nice part is we've got two coaches in terms of the revenue sports of basketball and football that embrace high expectations. And Coach Hardaway has never shied away from that, and Coach Norvell has never shied away from that. I think that's fabulous. And certainly it creates opportunity for some friction from time to time nationally. That's okay. I mean, that's just a part of what the issue is. It's part of the challenge.
Well, just 45 seconds here. You have a new athletic director, Laird Veach.
Fabulous. Yeah, absolutely. Couldn't have gotten a better person and I think you're going to discover is a remarkably good fit for Memphis, and he's going to take the thing the next step.
And Allie Prescott, who came in as the interim and is kind of a really storied figure around the U of M and around all kinds of things, sports in Memphis and other issues. He will stay attached to the U of M in some fashion?
He will. He's going to stay attached with us for through the spring. He's going to work with me as a special advisor. We've got some development projects we're working on now that you're going to hear more about, and he's going to help see those to completion.
All right. We will leave it there. Didn't get to some of the other things, but we'll leave it. Not enough time left. Thank you for being
here.
My pleasure. Thank you, Bill, and thank you for joining us. Join us again next week.